Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome to Emmaus Way. Gather round as you are able. And we'll begin another week. This would be our second, really focusing in on questions of witness, of what it means to look at the world we're handed and be faithful to it in spite of our inadequacy, and this week especially in spite of the bodies we carry with us, which are all too often more frail than we might hope. So to start us in that conversation tonight, we have this lovely reflection from Jan Richardson, The Healing That Comes. I know how long you've been waiting for your story to take a different turn, how far you've gone in search of what will mend you and make you whole. I bear no remedy, no cure, no miracle for the easing of your pain, but I know the medicine that lives in a story has been broken open. I know the healing that comes in ceasing to hide ourselves away with fingers clutched around the fragments we think are none but ours. See how they fit together, these shards we have been carrying, how in their meeting they make a way we could not find alone. Amen. So, welcome again. Come on in. Folks, great to see you. Welcome. That is a great reflection to guide us straight into the conversation we're having this evening around questions of brokenness as they relate to our bodies. I think we're just going to continue right forward into the community song, but before I do that, I'm going to let Rhody say what's going on upstairs.
We are in our third week of our ordination series, so the event's getting ordained in two more Sundays on November 4th, and so we are trying to give some context for what that is going to look like and what that means, so that's what we're doing.
She's trying to tell the kids not to trust anything I say before November 4th. Maybe afterwards, too, but certainly not until. So, and I'm excited to join the kids upstairs next week. Are you talking about your ordination this week, Rhody? There you go. So, and as we always do, often this is coming out of the kids' stuff. In this case, I think, this is a song that, as I've shared a couple weeks ago, was especially meaningful to me to discover in Emmaus Way. The idea that what I bring to God in terms of belief and certainty might not be the most important thing about that conversation. And so, we've been singing it together for the past couple weeks. So I'll get us started, and please join in. When you start to doubt that you exist, God believes in you. Confound your body. Kids, we bid you upstairs to talk about ordinations, including mine. I'll join you next week and tell you all the three things I know. So, announcements, things happening in this community. Let's see. I know there is a big, big Durham Can assembly this Saturday.
So, there are two big things with the Can that are happening this week. On Tuesday, the clergy caucus is meeting with two vice presidents of Duke University. conversation with them around JAX and what that looks like and sort of our hopes and how we might be able to partner. So I'm really excited to be able to co-convene that on Tuesday. And then and there will be an action about that in the spring. But on Saturday, there's an action around those who have been justice involved and what our judges, those running for office, kind of how we're inviting them to basically say no to bail or try to get rid of, they have the power and the ability to not fine persons who are being arrested in quite the ways that they are. And so that's really what the assembly on Saturday is about. So it's at 10 a.m. The Mayus Way has pledged 20 people to come. Yes, children count in our number, so bring your kids. We're really hoping to get 25. I'm competitive, and we'll like to meet some larger churches that are going to be 25 people. So come on, bring 25. 10 o'clock, first pres. Sarah and Joe will be there. Joe will be there, and the thought is that we're having it first pres, so after the assembly around kind of criminal justice issues and holding these judges accountable and hearing from them, then everyone that's gathered, we have over 500 people pledged to attend, we will then walk over an early vote on Saturday, right across the street. So please come, probably 10 to noon, let myself, Joe Seymour, Tim Wooten, or Tim Conner know if you can come. You can always come to the assembly and not go early. So it's going to be an exciting time. We've pledged 20.
It is an exciting time. If you haven't been to a Durham Can assembly, they are a very powerful piece of political theater. Inspiring, but also very powerful for, what a certain number of 100 people in a room in front of a group of politicians on the mic can actually do. So yeah, I encourage you to check it out. If you haven't, or come back if you know what it's about. I can't recall anything else that we should announce for this week, but is anybody else? I've been leaving this wide open. There you go. That's right. Sue's has one.
I have an announcement because I will be with y'all next Sunday. Last year, one of the gatherings that I led music at, I played some songs that were written by incarcerated women in Raleigh, and we're having a revival of the program on October 30th at Duke Chapel as a fundraiser for Interfaith Prison Ministry for Women. There are already 250 people signed up to go to that, but it's Duke Chapel, so there's room for hundreds more. And we're bringing the program back with two women who are now out, and one of them was very recently doing reentry work, policy work with the governor on reentry. So really exciting things to hear. There's going to be liturgical dance. There's going to be some other musical treats. So I hope that if you all are free on October 30th, 7 o'clock. There's a 6 o'clock reception if you want free food. 7 o'clock to come to Duke Chapel. It's all free to hear some of these songs and then kind of see what has happened in the lives of some of these women in the last year, because it's good stuff, and I'm very excited. And we're going to be on the State of Things on Friday the 26th at around noon, I believe. So pitching it. So please come if you're free on Tuesday the 30th. It should be a good time.
Fantastic. Tuesday the 30th. All right. 6 p.m. for the food, 7 p.m. for the songs. All right. Thank you, Suze. Somebody help me get that, on the weekly and social, et cetera. I keep saying I'm going to do it, and I haven't done it yet. Sorry. Okay. Anything else from the crowd? Stuff happening in this community, in your life, that you'd like to throw out? All right, then. In that case, I'll invite Suze, our visiting artist of the evening, along with Charles, Adam, and John, up to lead us in some songs of preparation. Very apropos to this questions of what you do when your body, your life situation just don't quite work in the same way you thought they should.
I've been out walking I don't do too much talking these days. These days I seem to think a lot about the things that I forgot to do. And all the times I had the chance to, I've stopped my rambling. I don't do too much gambling these days. These days I seem to think about how all the changes came about my way. And I wonder if I'll see another highway. I don't think there's another these days. These days. And if I seem to be afraid to live the life that I have made in song, it's just that I've been losing so long. Da 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 da. I won't do too much scheming these days. These days I sit on cornerstones and count the time in quarter tones till ten. Please don't confront me with my failures. Please don't confront me with my failures. Oh, don't confront me with my failures. I've not forgotten them.
A note on the boxer. We don't say the word whores anymore. So we're singing this with apologies to the sex workers we know and love. I also kind of, when I read these lyrics, don't think that it's really a slam the way that Simon and Garfunkel mean it. But I did want to say that because, you know, I don't want to change the words of a song that's not mine, but we don't have to say that word hatefully.
I am just a poor boy, though my story's seldom told. I have squandered my resistance for a pocket full of mumbles, such are promises. All lies and jest, till a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. When I left my my home and family. I was a boy in the company of strangers, in the quiet of a railroad station, running scared, laying low, seeking out the poor quarters where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they would know. I come for a job, but I get no offers, just to come on from the horse on 7th Avenue. I do declare there were times when I was so lonesome I took some comfort there. Lie, lie, lie. I'm laying out my winter clothes and wishing I was gone, going home, where the New York City winters are and bleeding me, leading me, going home. In the clearing stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade, and he carries the reminders of every glove that laid him down or cut him till he cried out. In his anger and his shame, I am leaving, I am leaving, but the fighter still remains. Lie, lie, lie. Lie, 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 lie. I'm trying to tell you something about my life. Maybe give me insight between black and white. I'm the best thing you've ever done for me is help me take my life less seriously. It's only life after all. Well, darkness has a hunger that's insatiable, and lightness has a call that's hard to hear. And I wrap my fear around me like a blanket. I sailed my ship of safety till I sank it. I'm crawling on your shores. And I went to the doctor, I went to the mountains, I wept to the children, I drank from the fountain. There's more than one answer to these questions, pointing me in a crooked line. And the less I seek my source for some definitive, the closer I am to find. I went to see the doctor of philosophy, with the poster of Rasputin and a beard down to his knee. He never did marry or see a B-grade movie. He graded my performance, he said he could see through me. I spent 4 years prostrate to the higher mind, got my paper and I was free. And I went to the doctor, I went to the mountains, I wept to the children, I drank from the fountains. oceans pointing me in a crooked line. And the less I seek my source for some definitive, the closer I am to find. I stop by the bar at 3 a.m. to seek solace in a bottle or possibly a friend. I woke up with a headache, like my head against the board, twice as cloudy as I had been the night before. I went in seeking clarity, and I went to the doctor, I went to the mountains, I looked to the children, I drank from the fountains. We go to the doctor, we go to the mountains, we look to the children, we drink from the fountains, we go to the Bible, we go through the workout, we read up on revival, and we stand up for the lookout. There's more than one answer to these questions pointing me in a crooked line. And the less I seek my source for some definitive, the closer I am to find. Closer I am to find. The closer I am to find.
Thanks so much, Suze and band, for the great songs of prep. As we think about what it means to witness to broken bodies, and we're going to dive into that in just a moment, but first we're going to pass the peace. If you are new to Emmaus Way, I'm Molly. I am the pastor of this community, and it's my joy to see you tonight, and I'm really especially happy that my parents are here tonight from Tennessee. You might see the resemblance. But we are going to pass the peace. You can talk to them. They're really chatty. So if you don't want to talk, maybe don't go see my parents. But grab water and coffee. Some pretzels are in the back. Share the peace of Christ with one another. So glad you're here. And I'll call you back in just a few moments, and we'll get started. All right. If everyone would... So glad. It's been such a lovely passing of the peace. But if everybody would kind of work their way back toward the center. And in dialogical preaching and in being a dialogical community, kind of whoever's leading the dialogue has a lot of choice about where she or he place the questions and kind of the dialogue portion. And so tonight, I've pretty intentionally have the community talking at the beginning. And then on the back half, I'm kind of offering my witness to what it means to live in a broken body with lupus. So we're just going to dive. So all that to say, dive right in. Don't be afraid to talk. But whenever you hear kind of the phrase, frail broken bodies, what pops into your mind?
I think I've always thought of myself as a very strong person. And lately, I've come to feel closer to that term. I've had to just the beginning, I think it's just the process of life, right? You just start to feel solidarity with things you've never understood. Yeah. And we have this illusion that we're invincible and we're young, and then I think it just the rest of your life is just slowly peeled away. So now and then with my mom, is disabled. There's also like, there's this separation from the body and who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So the person is separate from the body, and the body is, in some ways, for us, it's your, it's kind of your burden and your ability and your disability. But it's also like you can't, the frustration with the body, the frustration with your mom's body, your sister's body, you know, like, enter your relationships, you have to separate them.
Mm-hmm. So kind of that there's, in one sense, we all kind of are living in these frail, broken bodies. And as we live, and as our life kind of goes on at different stages, we're reminded of our frailty and brokenness, as well as sometimes to kind of cope. Yeah. We often have to think about a disabled, kind of the person and their body and their broken body is separate almost. Thanks for that, Susan. Yeah, I know, I definitely understand and agree. What else? Whenever you hear frail, broken body, what do you think?
I'm always impressed with how little it takes to damage our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these action movies and people slamming cars around and things like that. And I'm just like, no, it's fracturing everything in your body. It just doesn't take much to break us.
It doesn't take much to break us. Thanks, Gail. Yeah, it's very true. What about, how do you all handle kind of healing, right? So that some broken bodies are healed and some aren't. What kind of, what does that stir up within you? Does it, are you like, oh, okay, well, that's how it is, or other emotion? Or maybe I'm the only one who thinks about this. Could also be possible. But yeah, what do you all think about some broken bodies that are healed on this side of heaven and eternity, and others that aren't? Yeah, Clinton?
There's healing, right? The body comes back together, but it doesn't fully ever heal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm missing a knuckle from when I broke my hand, but that's not what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the most like damaged bodies I've seen, and I need to take it to really dark place really quick, sorry. But was as a kid, being part of a foster family, there were a lot of children who came to my home who had been very physically abused. And you know, one had terrible, terrible burns. And I watched her heal, right, from these like second degree burns all over her body. But like that's not, she wasn't healed. I mean, not only did she have scars, but obviously like I think any time your body's truly damaged in some way, whether it's physical violence or disease or whatever, like you carry it with you. You're never quite good.
Thanks. So even for those that are healed physically, they still carry the trauma of what was with them. Yeah. Others, what do you all think about healing and some bodies? Yeah, Joy.
Well, when I had to have my hip replaced, and the doctor told me that that's what needed to happen, I just burst into tears. I just thought, this is it. You know, and from now on, I'm just going to be an old handicapped person. And I was really distraught about it. And he said, you know, it may not be that way at all. It could be really great. Well, as it turned out, it was really great. But I felt so betrayed that just as soon as I turned 65, you know, things started breaking down. And, you know, it's not the same as it was, but it's fine. You know, it doesn't keep me from doing anything except sitting cross-legged. So, but it kind of made me mad at first. I thought, okay, you know, here, you know, I'm falling apart.
Yeah, betrayal.
It was just an exaggeration in my mind, really.
Yeah. So. Deep feelings of betrayal. Jim, did you have something to say?
No,
oh, I'm so sorry. Sorry. Bad timing.
Some years ago, heard me tell a story about a fellow that was a doctor when I was living in the Congo. We were in a mission station in a very remote place, kind of like living in a fishbowl, just a dozen people. And the physician in the hospital there had a disease where his immune system was breaking down his muscles. And he would fall and couldn't get up. And we prayed at least once a week, fervently, for long times. We had no TV, we had no radio, we had candles, and we spent lots of time talking to each other and praying and praying and praying for healing, which never came. And then he passed away.
Yeah. What do you do, right? Yeah, what do you do with that? So, yeah. Thanks, Jim.
So, I went to a church in California, you know, where there's tons of miracles and stuff. And I went out there and lived there. And believe it or not, there were so many miracles. People would do miraculous things as a joke to each other. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you pray for someone's limbs to grow out, they would grow out. This guy had this gift of healing. He actually commanded the name of Jesus, his fingers to grow off him for me. And so, like, people have been praying for my leg to grow off, for my foot to sort of fall. So this guy did that to his fingers, was like, oh, pray for my leg. Didn't get healed. I got healed with nothing. But I was so angry with God, I did not understand how this could be possible. And it really, I've been wrestling with that for a long time.
Right. I think that these questions and the reality that we really occupy frail, broken bodies and seeing other people be healed and reading, right, a canon of healing text and narratives, but witnessing when healing doesn't come for your dear friend or when healing doesn't come for you, what are you supposed to do with that? And so what do you think it means to come alongside and witness, to show up, not to fix, but be present to the bodies that aren't healed? To be present to the wrestling?
I think it means to take on some of that pain.
Take on some of that
pain. Take on some of that broken. Which can feel like defeat. Really frustrating. Powerlessness. Feels like powerlessness. Lots of mourning. But, taking on some of it.
There's also a certain element of guilt for me.
Mm-hmm.
As a physician, I want to heal, but I know there are many, many, many most things that are beyond medicine's capability to heal, and I feel guilty about that. I watched my mom die of Parkinson's, and there was a lot of guilt in not being able to make her comfortable, not being able to cure her, or even help her eat. So, there's a lot of guilt.
There's a lot of guilt and a lot of pain and a lot of exhaustion and coming alongside broken bodies. Thanks for your thoughts. Kind of just as the beginning of our conversation shows, these questions and really the reality of living in frail, broken bodies and what it means as people of faith and as people invited to bear witness and reclaim kinship doesn't really have a single simple answer or even an answer, right, that you can tie up with a pretty bow. And if I'm being honest, because I couldn't really tie up these questions in a pretty bow and because for a really long time I was a pretty young, healthy, abled body,
I didn't think about what it meant to witness to broken bodies. And I didn't really give that much serious thought to healing narratives in the gospel, what they said or didn't say about God's power over illness until October 18th, 2015. 3 years ago this week was the moment when systemic lupus erythematosus became a permanent, I probably messed up that last word because I'm not a medical professional, but SLE lupus became a permanent altering partner in my body, in my life, and in my world. And ever since, I have experienced fevers, sun sensitivity, ulcers on different parts of my body, joint pain, debilitating fatigue, and frailness of varying degrees every day, 1,098 days and counting. And every day I wake up and I feel my frail, broken body. And over these days, I've been trying to make sense of it all. What does God's agency, goodness, and power have to do with frail, broken bodies? And why are some bodies healed this side of heaven and others continue to deteriorate? And what follows is my offering, my witness to that question for you all. But first, would someone read the text for us?
Now he was teaching one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and just then there appeared a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She was bent over and was quite unable to stand up straight. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said, "Woman, you are set free from your ailment." When he laid his hands on her, immediately she stood up straight and began praising God. But the leader of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, "There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be cured, and not on the Sabbath day." But the Lord answered him and said, "You hypocrites! Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day?" When he said this, all of his opponents were put to shame, and the entire crowd was rejoicing at all the wonderful things that he was doing.
Thanks so much, Sarah. So I really struggle with healing narratives. I avoided them before October 18th, 2015, and I just struggle with them now. Especially because these narratives, I think more than they display the power and possibility of God, which they do in fact do, and they do in fact reveal, seem to reinforce a predominant societal narrative that healing of frail, broken bodies is the best thing, because our society on the whole doesn't know how to deal with folks that will never be well. But we better understand in what bodies that will be made well. For it's only once people are rehabilitated, normalized, and hopefully cured that really in society they start to play a starring role. They're the sign of progress, the proof of development, the triumph over the mind or body. And until that happens, those walking around in these frail, broken bodies are somehow less than, or somehow pressured to strain a bit harder to achieve assimilation back into perfection and back into productivity. But what if you're living in a frail, broken body that'll more than likely forever and always in one way or another be sick this side of heaven and never healed? What are we to do in these bodies, as Susan so poignantly put, right? They're all kind of frail and broken, right? And every day we're walking more toward that if we haven't already experienced it. What do? Well, I think you do what the woman in this text did. A person having lived with a chronic rheumatic illness for 18 years. You face the day. You slowly wake up, You feel the joints in your body shooting pain and warm to the touch. You give yourself a little pep talk. All I have to do today is get to the synagogue for Sabbath. I can do this. I can, in fact, do this. You stand up, and then you take one step and then another, feeling your body in ways you did not know before the illness claimed you. But one step and then another, and you're walking through the synagogue. Not looking for healing, because you probably gave that up a while ago. It has been 18 years. But merely showing up to be present in that place, in that moment, believing that somehow this practice of showing up with your whole self matters to God, and maybe even to others gathered around. And I wonder if this woman had words of desperate hope that she clung to. Something like Jan Richardson's ringing in her ears, pounding in her heart as she walked through that synagogue telling herself, look, the world is always ending somewhere. Somewhere the sun has come crashing down. Somewhere it has gone completely dark. Somewhere it has ended with the slammed door, the shattered hope. Somewhere it has ended with the utter quiet that follows the news from the phone, the television, the hospital room. Somewhere it has ended with a tenderness that will break your heart. But listen, this blessing means to be anything but morose. It has not come to cause despair. It is simply here because there is nothing a blessing is better suited for than an ending. Nothing that cries out more for a blessing than when a world is falling apart, when a life is falling apart. This blessing will not fix you, will not mend you, will not give you false comfort. It will not talk to you about one door opening when another one closes. But this blessing, God's self, will simply sit beside you among the shards and gently turn your face toward the direction from which the light will come, gathering God's self about you as the world begins again. All this woman came to do was corporately sit in the shards of her life, her broken body, just as she had done in her home, but hoping perhaps in this synagogue another might sit down beside her. For she came to the place she hoped from which light would come, from which wholeness may come. Sitting in the shards of life is really an odd experience when you are new to a place. It's really weird. James and I had been in Durham exactly 2 months before my body basically shut down or revved up, depending on how you look at it. You know, kind of became a little combustible, which sounds exciting. And with the same fierce determination I have had since I was a little girl, I was determined to beat the thing that felt like the flu. James and I could do this on our own. But weeks passed, and I was getting worse, not better, and test results started rolling in, as well as referrals to other doctors. By that November, we first heard the words, "It looks like you may have lupus." By that December, at the rheumatologist, the lupus diagnosis solidified even more. And there were tears, so many tears. So many tears, my rheumatologist didn't know what to do, and he awkwardly, like, handed me a box of Kleenex, like, I don't know what to do here. Tears, alongside the fear of death, of a life cut short, of would my body ever be my own again? And I knew that I should tell you all. But Mercy, how do you begin vulnerably sharing with this new community to which you've been called and say, I'm really sorry, our relationship is just beginning. I don't even know all your names or stories yet, actually, but I'm sick. And I'm not sure when I'll get better. But I do know this illness will forever mark our journey together. I will never not be your pastor without lupus. But I couldn't say those words initially to you all because I couldn't say those words to myself. I didn't quite know who to tell what was going on and who to keep up a brave face for. The days were long and the weeks were uncertain, but somehow every Sunday I would wake up desperately desiring to be with you, my community. Walking into this community in great physical pain, not looking for healing from you, nor was I necessarily showing up to be noticed more than I already was as the new pastor, but I showed up to be present in that moment with whomever had gathered that week, desperately believing our practice of a weekly corporate gathering where we fervently hold both the light and the dark of a mysterious world and a loving God together as community, that somehow that practice, our coming together to see and be seen, was restoring wholeness within my broken, frail body. And Sunday after Sunday, so many of you in different ways would see me and call me over, look into my eyes, truly caring how I was. You'd push me past my, I'm okay, or I'm just fine. Not trying to fix me, but able to handle the whole unpretty truth. Willing to sit in the shards of my life, my illness, with me and with James. Barely even knowing us. And you wouldn't heal me from my ailment. No, you wouldn't heal me. But you would lay hands of love and care on me. In those moments, then and even now, I would know that while my body may be frail and broken, you were calling out my wholeness, rooted in something greater that even lupus could not destroy. And Jesus offered that same gift to the woman in the synagogue that day as he proclaimed, "Woman, you are set free from your ailment." And sure, when he laid his hands on her body was healed, and she was able to stand up straight. But I think the power of this story really comes in Jesus seeing and coming alongside this woman, reminding her of her wholeness and worth. But the synagogue leader, he wasn't down with wholeness. Well, really, he wasn't down with the woman being healed on the Sabbath day, for the Deuteronomic Code told them there were 6 other good days for healing. He knew how healing was supposed to happen, and it was not to happen to this woman on this day. But at the heart of it, wasn't the synagogue leader just kind of pushing up against wholeness as claimed and understood through Sabbath? The notion that God, as seen and known through Jesus, might in fact proclaim wholeness for all people as more powerful than law, societal understanding, Deuteronomic code, status quo realities, this yearning for perfection, and yes, even proclaim wholeness as greater than healing. And that was just too much for the synagogue leader. I imagine the synagogue leader to have meant well. He was just trying to help the woman and Jesus know what was up, what was acceptable and what obviously was not. And I'm confident that we all know at least one person or two who tries to help us kind of know what's up, right? The one who just calls to make sure we know that X or Y about this, that, or the other. Who makes us aware of those written and unwritten rules. Or even better, once you're sick, maybe some of you have had this experience, or once a loved one is sick or someone you care about deeply, they'll call and say, "Well, you know, if you just go on that diet, then you would be made well. Or if you cut out sugar, or if you tried this herbal supplement, or if you go on this medication but not that one, or if you quit your job and rested more, or if you try this meditation technique, or gosh darn it, if you would just pray more, you must not be a fervent enough prayer. You could step away from the shards, Molly, and you would be healed. Your body would be restored, and you would once again be the thing our society values most, a fully abled body human. And yet, in Feminist Queer Crip, Dr. Allison Kafter asserts, it becomes so obvious that people with disabilities have experiences by virtue of their disabilities which non-disabled people do not have, and which are, or can be, sources of knowledge that is not directly accessible to non-disabled people. Some of this knowledge, for example, how to live with a suffering body, would enrich and expand our culture, and some of it has the potential to change our thinking and our way of life profoundly. And the really crazy thing is that those of us sitting here who are captivated by the gospel are captivated by a God who ultimately took on the form of a broken body, not a fully abled body, inviting us through that suffering body, we might change our way of thinking and our ways of life profoundly. And the most scandalous thing is that even in a resurrected state, God did not heal God's own brokenness in her defeat of death, but rather Jesus invited his disciples to see his broken, resurrected body, to touch him and feel his nail-marked hands and pierced side. He invited them not to run away from the frail brokenness, but out of Christ's very brokenness, claim the wholeness of God. That there is brokenness in the world is beyond doubt. That we live in frail, broken bodies is fact. But for Christ to suggest that we can repair that brokenness through celebrating wholeness? Wow. And so Christ invited the disciples and us to see that it is in fact restored wholeness that conquered death, not healing. Healing. It's a pretty popular, conflicted word. And some people find it odd that I don't pray explicitly for healing. I haven't prayed that prayer, and I don't plan on praying it anytime soon. And I understand it's a bit weird. I mean, would I take a non-lupus-ridden body in an instant? Of course, 100%. Do I keep others from praying for a complete healing of my body? Not at all, if that's what they want to do. Do I still believe in miraculous healings? Yes, 100%, without a doubt. And maybe one will come for me, or maybe it will come through really brilliant scientists figuring out a cure for this cruel disease. But I've discovered over the past 3 years that if I get in a mindset of healing, I can pretty quickly turn into the synagogue leader, desperately wanting things to be as the law preaches, getting pissed at having to settle for wholeness when others find healing, and I'm desperately wanting my deserved healing back into an able-bodied human form. And I start balancing what's right and what's wrong with what's just and unjust. I end up just being angry at how unfair life is, how unfair the system is. And there's nothing wrong with going there. Hear me say, there is nothing wrong with going there. But I found for myself, I can't stay there because the invitation of Christ isn't into healing, but a wholeness that comes from brokenness itself. It's an invitation that each day I'm invited, just like the woman, to face the day in the body I've been given, frail and all. After 1,098 days of illness and seeing some bodies healed and others continue to deteriorate. I still don't know why God's agency, goodness, and power heals some this side of eternity, and others are still what people call broken. But over these days, weeks, months, in this broken, frail body, I have come to discover a liberating wholeness that has expanded my world far more profoundly than I ever experienced in my well body. And so day after day, I don't pray to be healed, but each day as I wake up and feel pain in my joints, as I wake up and I move my tongue around in my mouth to see if there's a new ulcer there, as I put my hand on my forehead to try to gauge what my temperature is that day. Is it a fever? Is it just at like 99 so I'm still functioning? Or are we good? Is it at like a 97.2? So I place my hand on my forehead. As I some days get out of bed rather slowly, I remember that it's in these acts of recognizing my body. It is in these acts of seeing my body in its sick state that Jesus is calling me into wholeness as a daughter of Abraham. And I'm invited to remember and see my wholeness from that very place. And it has been so many of you sitting around this room and others who have come alongside me and have borne witness to my plight and have reminded me of my wholeness. It is you who have spotted me in the synagogues of this world, called my name, and drawn near. So many of you have chosen to come and sit with me in the shards of my life, in the shards that lupus created and continues to create. And from my very brokenness, name the wholeness that is within me. You've laid hands of love and hope on me. You have called out the synagogue leaders of our day so I don't have to. You've even called out the synagogue leader within me and learned to silence your own over 3 years. Though you haven't healed my body as Jesus did so long ago, you've reminded me that we all are, in fact, walking around in frail, broken bodies. And to truly live, to truly understand Christ's redemption and resurrection of wholeness and not healing, we must bring together all these shards of our life that we have been carrying alone. For in their meeting, they make a way we could not find without one another. A way that points me, points us, toward where the light comes from, even when we can't turn ourselves. A light pierced with brokenness of nails and spear, yet still a light redeemed and resurrected. A light calling the world to begin again, not by right answers or perfect healing, but even still a light made whole. What does it mean to witness to broken bodies that may not be made whole this side of heaven? Just that. Just that. What you've already been doing for me and for so many others. This day and always. Thanks be to God. Now we will have confession and absolution. Thank you.
say it's here where our pieces fall in place. And it rains softly, kisses us on the face. Any wind means we're running. We can sleep and see them coming. Where we drift and call it dreaming. We can weep and call it singing. Strong enough, we can bow, cause our music's warmer than blood. Where we see enough to follow, we can hear when we are hollow. Where we keep the life we're given, we can lose and call it living. Where the sun isn't always sinking fast. Every night knows how long it's supposed to last. Where the time of our lives is all we have. And we get a chance to say before we seize away. For all the love you've left behind, have lost my mind. I forget his name, though I loved him all my life. Lost my wife, standing next to me, thinking it's a different time. I'm tired of telling her that JFK has died. Oh, our bodies betray us. Our bodies betray. Our bodies cripple and delay. lost my hell. Tired of sitting here, sick of nothing else. Pray me well. Gather two together and cast a holy spell. But every day this body feels a little more like hell. Oh, our bodies betray us. Our bodies betray. Mind if this breaks me? I don't think you mind if I'm sick. Something got defiled up on Calvary, and I'm sure there was a point to it. Our bodies betray us, but your body is bread.
Thanks, Sue's band, for a very appropriate confession and absolution. Thanks to Molly for being our pastor. I am inviting you to a table tonight where the shards of our life, the shards of our certainty, that we know how it goes, that we know how it will be, that we know how it ends, that we know how to get there. The shards of our impermeability. The notion that we were always going to be alone, ourselves, just fine, needing no one, being secure. It's a table, I think, that might free us from the idea that there is a better time, a better place, a better way, a better method than the one we've yet found to be made well. If we could just find one of those, maybe we would finally be well. Maybe then it would be the time and the way and the place to be whole. I think it's a table that opens us to the unlikely, often unwelcome, the scandalous idea that in our most vulnerable state, our most permeable state, some new and different way of being with God and each other is being offered up to us. I think it's a table where we can be honest about the fact that more often than not, our bodies betray us, they cripple us, they delay us, and this does not change the fact that there is a body, a broken body that is bread. And it reminds us that broken is indeed not synonymous with useless. And poured out is not the same thing as empty. And it's in light of all those things that I invite you to this table tonight to pour juice and wine for each other, to break bread or a gluten-free cracker for each other, and say the body of Christ broken for you. The blood of Christ shed for you, the love and light of Christ in this broken place with these broken people in these broken bodies. For you, for us. So I invite you to come and see how these shards fit together. Wonder how in their meeting they might still make a way, might set down among us for a little while, a way that we could not find alone. You're most welcome at this table, a place of brokenness and wholeness for everyone here. Surprising, unwelcome, scandalous, and here it is. Come to the table.